What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN. Some of the people on the Twitch chat, twitch.tv/ESPN975, are discussing that Altuve play in the eighth inning.
Yep.
Trying to get to third base. Nobody there after Pena laid down the bunt. Some people didn't love the bunt that I was talking to. I didn't hate a bunt there. Tacking on a run late, kind of the time to do it. I did not like the aggressiveness by Jose Altuve there. Yordan Alvarez is your best offensive player. They probably don't pitch to Yordan Alvarez there because first base would be open with two outs. Okay, Alex Bregman drove in the game-winning run. I don't want to run into an out there. Like, if the chances of running into an out there are like 5%, you don't do it because you're taking the bat out of Yordan Alvarez's hands, probably Alex Bregman's hands. Wasn't good base running by Jose Altuve. I think he'd be the first one to admit it.
Not to mention, though, the fact that that insurance run was so important. Sure. Like, you get an extra run there in that situation, and it's a massive and monumental thing to do. I understand why he did it because no one was there. I think the other thing that I thought the national network should have done a little better job of was if you run the slow-mo at third base, his arm gets in before the tag. Donaldson missed him initially. His arm gets in until he overslides the bag, and when he comes off the bag, Donaldson keeps the tag on him, and he's out. All they wanted to do was glorify Rizzo as one of three first basemen that could make that play and throw to an open spot, not a player. But I understand when he's rounding the base, he sees nothing but sunshine and no one near it. But to your point, you just don't want to take a chance right there because you're in the driver's seat to try and get one more run, which is more important. But I mean, we've seen too much of this for people to be forgiving of that. I knew right away when it happened, people were going to kill him for it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people defending Altuve, actually, on our Twitch, saying, high IQ baseball play, taking an open third base. Yordan Alvarez is one of the best hitters in all of baseball, and Yordan Alvarez did not have a chance to bat in that inning with a runner in scoring position. Like, I don't understand how that's a high baseball IQ play. It's the opposite of that. Jose Altuve has been notorious in his career for bad base running. He does it quite often. There's times whenever it pays off and it's rewarding. More times than not, it's not good. But look, who cares? They won the game, right? But I don't want, like, if you're down a run in that spot, Yordan Alvarez is the final out of an inning with Yordan Alvarez about to bat with a runner in scoring position, you would not be saying it's good baseball IQ.
And here's the other one, Jeremy, because like you said, the reason why this all gets kind of looked over is the fact that they won the game.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one that really bothered me, and everybody can say, well, he ended up scoring anyway. But you know what? What if he didn't? Yordan not getting to third base on that ball where Judge had to turn his back on home plate and go all the way into the right field corner. There's no way he shouldn't have been tagging. There's no way he shouldn't have been standing on third base without having to slide after Judge made that play. That could have been costly. Thank goodness it wasn't, again, but there's another bad base running by a team, by a guy, and we're not nitpicking here. It's just that for all the good and all the accolades and the fact they haven't lost a game, the reason why we're not talking more about those plays is because they ended up overcoming them. The Yankees, you can talk about that bad flip at second base because they didn't overcome it.
That was not a good flip. Not very good. 713-780-ESPN.
Kind of was coming at 100 miles an hour.
I mean, he's trying to turn two there. I thought it was a terrible flip. I thought that was more on Glaber than IKF.
I think it was on both sides, but I understand the flip was bad. But like, if he just comes up square to the bag, you could find a way with either foot. You're going to hit the bag. You're still going to get a solid throw there. But he came so far to the left side that I think he put himself in a bad position.
Yeah. I mean, he was trying to make a play. I'm not denying that he was in bad position. I think it was more of a bad flip. Did either one of them play the ball correctly? Probably not. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line and get Nick in here. Nick, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Nick?
Hey, guys, I love the show. I just really wanted to do a statement. I just want to give it up to, you know, the core guys like Yuli, you know what I mean, going day in and day out, like doing the defense, getting the hits we need, Bregman, of course, you know, it's really good to see those guys getting it done from the past couple of years, and I'm really excited. And man, I haven't felt this good about this team in a long, long time. Against the Yankees and Yankees. Thanks, guys. Love the show. I'll help off.
Thanks, Nick.
Big fan of Yuli Gurriel, it sounds like, for Nick. Yuli's been fantastic in the
playoffs.
You
see his quotes this weekend, too? Unlike Judge and these guys that say, well, it never crossed my mind, you know, free agency or otherwise, Yuli was asked point blank about it, and he responded, sure, I think about the inevitability of me not playing here someday and when that's going to happen and all of the good times that he had. And so he was honest in the fact that I'm sure while he was struggling the most in the regular season, he thought about this being his last season possibly in this place that's given him this massive opportunity and how he's taken advantage of it. Now, because of this playoff run, I think there's a pretty good chance he comes back next year. You know, the price has got to be right.
Yeah.
But I think because of what he did, and I know that's, you know, a hot button of yours, whether he starts or not is a different story, but I think that he's earned the right, and I think that they will look to do the right thing and bring him back for at least one more year because of what he's done in this postseason.
I don't think the Astros will bring him back as a starter. Now, he could be on the team. You're not really looking to sign 39-year-olds who had OPSs under 700. He's had a tremendous postseason, tremendous like fountain of youth, and I love what I'm seeing.
But if he takes like 4 or 5 a year?
You want a sub-700 OPS guy playing 162 games at first base?
But we obviously know that, you know, you could say I could go back a year ago and say, do you want the batting title and a gold glove? He's
all right,
older.
Let's add both years together for
he's
Yuli Gurriel.
Older.
Let's take both of them into account. Let's see. Last 2 years for Yuli Gurriel, his OPS is 747. Not bad. I think 750
for
4 a year, average.
Especially if you're looking to spend money elsewhere and you got to pay over more for Verlander.
I mean, that's cheap. That's not bad. But if you have a 747 OPS, you're giving a lot away offensively at first base.
I just, you know, the more I think about it, too, you look at the fact that the regular season is such a grind for him that I just don't know if he's meant, you know, if it's meant to be at this point in his life and his career and his body to go out there every day. But obviously, when the playoffs roll around, he ramps it up, takes it to a new level, and is still fully capable of hitting major league pitching. And he's done that for this team in this playoff run. If you can get him for 4 or 5 a year, and whether you platoon him or you find other ways to use him, you know, whether he's a pinch hitter and or in big situations, no moment's too big for him.
I like him back on this team, just not as a starter. Like, if he's my backup corner infielder and then it's my insurance policy for first base, my insurance policy for DH. Like, imagine if you had Yuli Gurriel as a, like, okay, this is weird because Yuli Gurriel is your starting first baseman. But imagine you had Yuli Gurriel's, like, capability, like maybe his clone as your backup this year. Well, now you have a really good insurance policy for a DH in case you have a struggling DH. If you bring in another first baseman, you have a struggling first baseman, then you have a first baseman ready to go. Maybe you have an injury at one of those positions too, and Yuli Gurriel is that natural fit.
He's your Trey Mancini.
Yeah, but I think he can also play some third base. Like, I think he can play corner infield.
Right.
Not too many games at third base, but back. Like, he's a backup. He's a reserve. He still might start 60 games. And like you said, with his age, might be the best thing to keep him fresh. So
he could be like an Aledmys Diaz. I'm looking for a guy that can play infield. I'm sure he could play outfield. He could DH for you. He could play first base. I don't think I want to see him in the outfield.
Probably not
per se.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say, because the other thing that I'm going to say that's probably not going to be too popular, and we were talking about it before the show, is that I don't want to lose Vasquez. I just don't want that. His bat is too good. BMAC and I were talking too. I just think that
I'm okay with losing Diaz at this point.
I'm talking about Vasquez.
Oh, Vasquez. Yeah, Vasquez says he wants to play though.
I know he wants to start. He's actually basically indicated if the Red Sox would have him, he wants to go back there. But if Vasquez was your everyday starting catcher and Maldi was your backup, just like you had a starting first baseman and Yuli was your backup, you've got so much depth and so many different options with both guys because Vasquez is such a good stick. He could DH. I love having Vasquez's fit on this team offensively with what, you know, how he's fit in.
I think the chances of that are like less than 10%.
Probably.
Because they love Maldonado. And they threw that catcher's ERA graphic on Maldonado so that he leads all of baseball. Like, I think that there is something to that. If you have a catcher that is leading every other catcher in terms of ERA, now it helps that who Maldonado has throwing to him. That helps it when you have Verlander in this rotation and this pitching staff and all of that. But they love Maldonado's defense. And I think one of these two young catchers, too, it's time for them to be a backup catcher in the bigs. Whether it's Corey Lee, whether it's Yiner Diaz, one of the two are going to fight for the number two job on this team next year. And it's whoever's going to have the better spring training.
Who are the gold gloves in the American League? Was Maldi one of them?
I don't believe so. Was
Vasquez
see
one of them? Because at a time, they were both like 1-2 and throwing runners out, and in a lot of defensive categories, they were up there. And Vasquez is the best offensive hitting catcher in baseball. But I'm just curious. I know, and like with Peña, was Correa one of the finalists at short?
Correa was. The catchers were Trevino of the Yankees, yep. Raleigh for Seattle, and Sean Murphy of Oakland. So neither one of them. I think Peña was the only Astro. No, Tucker too.
Tucker was in right
field. So you had Tucker and Wright, and you had Peña at shortstop. We know that the Astros are going to play the Phillies in the 2022 World Series. The Astros have lost to an NL East team in the last two World Series. 21, the Braves. 19, the Nationals. Are you getting those vibes from the Philadelphia Phillies?
Yeah. I mean, they're the hot team. They're in a similar situation. And with the division and everything you can look at, you can say, hey, look, maybe the Braves, because they were down some offensive players, it was more about their young pitchers and all the pitching staff that they had a year ago. But just substitute that for the powerhouse offense the Phillies have put together. And look, Rhys Hoskins is the perfect example of a guy that was almost Altuve-ing. He was struggling so badly. And then he hit one big bat spiking home run, and it got him jump-started. And you add him to, like I said, the second-best home run hitter in all of baseball in Kyle Schwarber, a MVP candidate every single year in Bryce Harper, and then position by position, guys that are maybe overpaid for their ability to be young players at key positions with Hoskins, with a JT Realmuto behind the plate, a steady 300 hitter at second base in Gene Segura. They've got talent. Nick Castellanos, who they went out and got too, who's a steady stud outfielder, and a bat. You look at this team and say, hey, look, this offensive lineup, if you're not on your A game, they showed enough in that San Diego series. They could beat anybody any night of the week.
Phillies are a good team. There's a reason that they're here. They cruise through the Cardinals. They cruise through the Braves. They cruise through the Padres. They're a good team. They have two horses at the top of their rotation, and they have a lineup that's dangerous. I mean, Bryce Harper is living up to the hype of the postseason. We know what they have in Schwarber. I mean, this is an off and Alec Bohm, who's a very young player that can hit a little bit too.
Yep.
It's a very good team.
This is Major League Baseball's poster child for modern day playoffs. Last to get in, last still standing in the National League. When you get hot and you get an opportunity, this is why they support the wild card.
It's a World Series. You're going to get a good team.
Absolutely. You're
going to get a good team in the World Series. Four games to go, four things we might have been wrong about with the Houston Astros. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Astros. Down a run, Alvarez shoots one through the hole, a base hit. Altuve on his way to the plate. Judge's throw will come at the second. The Astros have tied it. Yordan Alvarez starting to heat up. His second hit of the game, 5-5 on the Alvarez RBI single.
They out for Houston. They got Houston.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Oh, Martin Maldonado. They asked for Houston, they got Houston. Sometimes you got to be careful what you ask for. Yankees asked for the Astros, and the Astros handed them a 4-0 sweep. First team in Major League Baseball history to knock off the Yankees and eliminate them in the playoffs four times. The only organization to ever do that is the Houston Astros. And as Pedro Martinez said yesterday, the Houston Astros are the Yankees' daddies. 15, 17, 19, and now in 22. And what's great about the 22 one, the Yankees, all the other ones are excused. Oh, they were still in signs in 17. They were still probably doing it in 19. We found out about it after 19, so we're really going to beat them this time. We're gonna atone for all of the losses. We're going to find justice for all the times the Houston Astros eliminated the New York Yankees. They didn't win a game. Didn't win a game, Blankers.
This is the one that, when we were looking for what could make it sweeter, and the storybook would have been, you beat the Yankees, you beat the Dodgers, and then you put them all to bed. And, you know, give them their whoopee and their warm milk and say, you know, night-night. But if you can't do that because the Dodgers can't even get there, the fact that you took the evil empire and you whooped their ass in four straight games and sent them home without a single chance to have an excuse other than a weak one about the roof in game two, that makes it so sweet to get back again. And in the process, taking all these lifelong New Yorkers like Bob Costas, or the fact that if you read Jeff Passan's column,
Don't forget the asterisk on his name.
He still was taking his little parting digs and shots, but he had to admit that the longevity and the run that the Astros have been on, has just been spectacular, and it's not about the cheating scandal anymore, as there's only four guys left. It's about how this organization continues to reinvent itself and continues to see the talent and sign the talent, starting with the pitching, but even a Jeremy Peña, so that they can have this longevity that's been a fantastic run.
713-780-ESPN. We're on Twitch as well, twitch.tv/ESPN975, at least for the few ones that have survived. So they're talking about the McCullers start, and some people are talking about replacing McCullers in the starting rotation with Luis Garcia. They've even mentioned the name Jose Urquidy. Look, I don't think Lance was at his best yesterday. Nope. Lance has always been a guy that is... when the conditions are suboptimal, Lance isn't always his best. And yesterday it was a little bit, not as wet as they would make you believe, a little bit wet, a little bit chilly.
You remember
saw him blowing the hands quite a bit.
I talked about it when we were talking about who would end up pitching where. And the one thing that I was concerned about was the weather as it related to a guy that when you have as many health issues as he's had with his arm, cold weather doesn't help. Then you mix in, like you said, the rain and the dampness in the air, and it doesn't help. And so someone even said on Twitch, and I think that, if they can do it, it would be an ideal situation. Have him pitch at home because you know that you can control the temperature.
It ain't happening, though.
And I know it's not, you know, but it's the probability, obviously, with the way it sets up with the 2-3-2 format, and you're going to go Fromber and JV in the first two. It's not going to match up that way, but that would be ideal because he looked like he was on his like his C-plus, B-minus game at best, and that was kind of the way he came back from the injury early on. But he had settled in when climate wasn't a factor, to where he was mowing guys. That Seattle start in the playoffs, that's what you wanted to piggyback on if you had your best, you know, case scenario.
I'm not touching the rotation. I'm not getting cute with the rotation. I don't think Lance was his best yesterday.
You think Javier's the three again, though?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's more critical in this series than it is in the ALCS. It's more critical in the World Series because every starter that's pitching game one, two, and three, this is a normal World Series. There's an off day after game two. There's an off day after game five. Everyone who starts game one, game two, game three is going to pitch twice. The only starter who's not going to pitch twice on full rest is your game four starter. So Verlander is going to pitch games one and five. Fromber is going to pitch games two and six should it get there. Javier would pitch games three and seven should it get there. Lance McCullers would pitch game four. And you know where those games are going to be played. 1-2-6-7 in Houston. 3-4-5 will be played in Philadelphia. I don't touch it, but I'm certainly not touching Lance McCullers and moving him out of my rotation either.
No, and once Javier did what he did yet again when you and I were going back and forth about who's going to be the three starter, and Dusty basically put it on the table for you the day before with the press conference where he said, we're looking for a guy that's kind of got that rubbery arm that can bounce back, that's durable, that can do the things we need him to do. That's not Lance McCullers. Lance McCullers is a lot of things. He loves the big moments. He loves having the ball in his hand in the playoffs and being able to go into hostile environments and pitch well. But because of the forearm coming off the Tommy John before that, he's not a guy that you want to risk too much bounce backs on short rest. And the fact that you realize you've got him signed under contract for a lot of money for several years, to where you don't want to take too many chances with him, especially when you don't have to.
No, it's shaping up for you perfectly. You get your top four all in a row, and it's how it's going to play out. Now, the champagne thing's kind of weird. No one asked him a question about his fingers.
You were the one that was on that, and you were the one that saw it first.
Cody tipped me off with the post-game celebration in Game 3 of the ALDS, but then I noticed it in the dugout when he still had
the
wraps.
Splint.
No one asked him about it.
No, and the thing is,
I thought it was
is,
more of a bandage than a splint.
Well, here was the other thing that I thought was very, very odd. Okay, so we heard it was a champagne bottle mishap from Dusty, but he wanted Lance to tell us. Then Lance said it was nobody's fault, but it was a champagne bottle to the elbow. Mm-hmm. I get home that night, and I put on the news, and Randy McAvoy is talking about a cut. And I'm like, well, time out. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Where'd that come from? And is it a cut or is it a bump on the elbow?
Both. Lance said both.
I mean, what is someone doing? Like playing swing the bottle and taking people out?
I mean, it's a party. It's a party. Mistakes happen in
a
parties.
A party with the same guy who happens to be hyper valuable with his arm and his finger.
We know he's made of glass. David Robertson suffered a calf strain for the Phillies in the wild card celebration and had to miss the division series. I mean, we see it in dog piles all the time where people get hurt.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was surprised that he was not asked about the finger,
I mean,
though.
Again, because we already dealt with the whole discomfort thing on everything Astros, I'm just curious what it really was and if we'll ever find out what really happened, because it's odd to say that it was because of a bump to the elbow that a guy had a splint on his finger for four straight days.
That was weird to me that he had. I thought it was more of a bandage than a splint. But either way, he had something on his finger and was never asked about the finger. That said, I didn't see anything wrong with the finger yesterday.
No, like, I mean, he would have been bleeding or, you know, could have potentially had blisters or something.
So, like, there was something on his finger, and maybe he was more proactive than reactive, which, fine, whatever, but there was certainly something on his finger. But I did not notice any sign of discomfort with the right finger yesterday. I also didn't notice any discomfort with his elbow. He just wasn't his very best suboptimal conditions, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to tinker with Lance McCullers and taking him out of my rotation. Now, it does mean I'm keeping him as my four starter and not bumping him over Javier. Right. And Lance McCullers, you're going to get one more start in the season, and I hope it's really good in a game four.
And if nothing else, when you look at the two guys, Javier was shoving. Javier did everything that you could have ever expected him to do that he had done previously.
And he hadn't started in, what, 3 weeks?
Yes. He had thrown an inning and a third in the over the last 3 weeks, and he comes in dealing like that and does what he does yet again to that lineup. There's no reason in the world why you'd go away from that. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And that is exactly what you wanted to see out of your third starter.
Yeah, he was fantastic. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Four things we might have been wrong about with the Astros. We'll do one here and then probably get to the other three on the other side. I was saying this, especially before the Brantley injury. Now, after the Brantley injury, you really didn't have any choice. But Yuli Gurriel should be benched. He had a terrible regular season, one of the worst offensive regular seasons that we've seen from a first baseman this year. And then what does Yuli do in the postseason? He turns back time. He finds the fountain of youth. Maybe it was pizza and beer. Who knows? But Yuli in the ALDS at 400, an OPS of 1,000. In the ALCS, he had 333, 867 OPS. Homered in both series. The defense turned back the clock there, too. Like, range increased for Yuli Gurriel in the postseason. We always know about his ability to scoop, too, the picks from Yuli Gurriel. I mean, shocked from what I've seen with Yuli Gurriel and could not be happier for a dude who's been a fan favorite for a long time.
No question. No question about it. And you know, I had been always bringing up, what about the defense? Just because of the fact the scoops are so important. But I had gotten to the point where we were waiting so long, hoping he'd snap out of it, that I had lost hope that he could snap out of it, and he snapped out of it. And God bless him for doing it, and thank goodness he did, because that has been such a huge shot in the arm with Altuve scuffling at the plate to find that offense again and to find those timely hits and the pop that I thought, again, was quite frankly gone at his age. He's been fantastic. On the flip side of that, I was wrong about Trey Mancini, because I was wrong as it led to whoever was going to be the possible replacement at first base for Yuli Gurriel. My bigger thing was Mancini had to be a trade day every day. He had to be in the lineup. And early on, the way he got going, the home runs that he was hitting, the fact that it was everything that we had said, getting out of Camden Yards and into a more homer-friendly environment, seemed to be the perfect fit and the perfect match. He's a great dude. He's just not hitting at all, and that's been a big disappointment.
Could that be one of the other things, that four things we might have been wrong about for the Astros? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN
92.5. Yeah, man, like, you know.
I was born in New York City.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Astros looking for four more games and four things that we could have been wrong about this Houston Astro team. We mentioned the Yuli should be benched. Totally wrong about that. He's been outstanding. In these playoffs. Hope it continues for four more wins. You alluded to the Mancini one, which is on this thing. This Mancini has to play more. And look, when they traded for him, we were huge advocates. I certainly was saying that the trade for Trey was very excited when the Astros got him, and hasn't lived up to, you know, the excitement of a lot of the fan base whenever James Click traded for Trey Mancini. That said, I still think he's going to be your DH, at least in Game 1 of the World Series. And I know he was hitless yesterday. He didn't have a hit in Game 3 either. He looks more competitive with his at-bats than Aledmys Diaz. Game 3, he had that fly out to the warning track against Gerrit Cole that went 385 feet.
Would have been out of like 21 parks.
Yeah, he pulls it a little bit. It's gone, too. He had the walk. And then he was down to two strikes whenever he hit the sacrifice fly to pretty deep left center field. He's looking more competitive right now with his plate appearances than Aledmys Diaz is.
Yeah, Chuck and I were talking on Twitch during the break, and that's exactly what I said. I said, look, it's kind of like when we saw signs Altuve could be finding it again, is the fact that when you have competitive at-bats, you're not just looking at pitches you should be swinging at and then flailing at pitches that you normally would lay off, and you look like you're completely outmatched at the plate. he looked like he had competitive at bats. Mm-hmm. I mentioned, like you did, that barreled up ball that either if you pull it, it's gone. If not, it would have been out in 21 other parks, which means he's seeing it and he's hitting it. It's just he's hitting it at people. It's the same way when Altuve was going through his 0-4. That's the way baseball works sometimes. Sometimes when you're, you know, in a slump, the best hit and most timely thinking in the way you approach an at-bat can backfire just because you hit it at somebody. So I like the fact that he's more competitive than Adolfo Diaz looked at the last time he played. And I think that Dusty had said going into New York, hey, we're going to play him for a couple of games. He's from that division. He knows that team.
Yeah.
He should know those pitchers. It'll be interesting how he handles the World Series. I think
that did him good whenever he said to start the he's going to start the next couple of games.
Gives him that load off his shoulders.
It gives him a runway. It gives him a runway like he gave Yuli.
If we didn't see anything, would Hensley see the field? I could see it in the Yankee series. I don't know on the World Series. I'm not opposed to it, but it's the World Series.
Look, right now I go Mancini over Diaz. I'm not ready to play the David Hensley card yet, but if Mancini has two games, the first two games of the series where he starts to look like he is completely lost again, I didn't think the last two games he looked lost. Looked better in game 3 than game 4, but not lost. Then David Hensley maybe is what you go to in desperation. Might also depend where you're at in the series. If you're up 2-0, I don't think you make that move just because you're up 2-0 and you kind of want to keep the confidence of who you're using in that spot.
I agree.
Here's another outside the box. And look, I don't think that the Astros are going to do this, but it is something I thought about on the drive in today. The Astros have not used Jose Urquidy at all. Mm-hmm. Maybe got up once. Mm-hmm. Seth Martinez was on the roster this past series, never got up. The Astros have a luxury right now with pitching, and they also have an extra off day in this World Series. I think that there's 0% chance the Astros are going to do this, by the way. I think that Seth Martinez is going to be off the roster. I think they're going to add Will Smith because you have Bryce Harper, you have Kyle Schwarber. I think they're going to want the lefty against a Philly lineup that has more balance. The Astros have the luxury, though, because they have some long guys in the bullpen. Luis Garcia, Jose Urquidy, even Hunter Brown is capable of going long. You didn't touch Seth Martinez. You didn't touch Jose Urquidy. You didn't touch Luis Garcia in this series either.
Right.
Luis Garcia did not pitch in the ALCS. The Astros could, because you have the extra off day, you know the depth of the staff, they could go with one less pitcher. That means you just drop Seth Martinez, you don't replace him with Will Smith. And what I'm getting to here is you keep a third catcher, which would allow Dusty Baker the option to use Christian Vasquez as your designated hitter.
Would you go to Giner or Corey Lee?
At this point, it'd be Giner
because
he was on the team more recently. And you're hoping that he's never going to play.
Right.
But he's an insurance option, and it allows you, because you have the third catcher in case you have an injury to Maldonado, to DH Christian Vasquez.
Corey Lee's traveling, right? He and Jake Meyers were having fun in the celebration yesterday.
I think Giner
he took
too.
A champagne bottle, and he was the play-by-play. He was the interviewer, and he was interviewing Jake because no one was talking to them. But Corey Lee is traveling. Jake is traveling. But you know what? If you're going to add another catcher, add one that at least if you wanted to use them or consider them as a designated hitter or do something differently, that you could do with the confidence that they can hit major league pitching.
Well, I don't think you're never going to play that guy. The hope is you're never playing. You don't want to play Giner Diaz in a World Series game, but it gives you the option to use Christian Vasquez as your DH.
Right, but that's what I was going to say. That was the other thing that I was going to get to that I mentioned during the last break on Twitch. I love Vasquez. I might be in the minority, but I would love a situation where, you know, Maldi is your catcher. That's fine if that's the way you want to go. And Vasquez threw a dart to get a guy out stealing to show you what a good defensive catcher he is.
Right on the bag.
But the fact is that he is a good stick. He is a quality stick that if you're struggling at designated hitter, and again, like you said, it depends on where you are in the series. But if you need offense, I'm not opposed to Maldi's behind the plate, but Vasquez is your designated hitter as long as you got a backup.
Yep.
In emergency cases, that if someone gets hurt or you got to do something, someone can come in and catch.
The path to getting to that third catcher is what's difficult, because mm-hmm. if you're keep, it doesn't matter the third catcher. It really does. It doesn't matter if it's Diaz or Lee. You don't want either one to play. Like, how do you get that third roster?
Well,
third
I think Urquidy might be the guy.
But that means you're keeping 12 pitchers. Like,
right.
I don't think you're dropping Urquidy to keep Seth Martinez or Will Smith, especially if you're only keeping 12 because you want a guy that can have some depth in case you're in an extra.
See, I'm all with you on the lefty is important in this series, even though everybody on Philly has seen Will Smith over the years in the National League.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, because the lineup says so, you need more of a left-handed presence in the bullpen. You drop Seth Martinez and you keep Will Smith. But if you're never going to use Urquidy and you haven't even needed to even think about him, then you could add an extra bat, because we've been thinking about on a daily basis, what the hell are they going to do at designated hitter? God forbid they need someone to get some quality at-bats at that position.
Now, you could, if you don't want to drop a pitcher and you still want to keep 13 pitchers, 13 hitters, you could take David Hinsley off the playoff roster, add the third catcher with the mindset that Christian Vasquez is going to start a game at DH, whereas you're probably not going to do that with David Hinsley. So that's kind of the path to getting a third catcher on the roster can be difficult. Can be done, though. 713-780-ESPN. Four things we might have been wrong about. Yuli should be benched. Mancini has to play more. B-Mac's taking a lot of satisfaction in this segment, by the way. Dusty Baker can't handle the bullpen. Didn't force Will Smith on the roster. The bullpen has been tremendous. Stanek's usage has been a talking point, but the Astros have the best bullpen ERA in the playoffs, so you can't even really use that as a negative. Now, it could be a question. It could be something that you ask, but he hasn't been wrong. In seven postseason games, a couple of the numbers for the Astros bullpen, sub-1 ERA, sub-1 whip, 7-3 whip, 8-2 ERA, 42 Ks in 33 innings, and opponents have hit 127 against this stellar Astro bullpen.
The bigger thing to me is Brian Abreu. Brian Abreu, all year I kept asking, why are you using him in these situations? What are you doing, and how are you managing your bullpen? And now Brian Abreu has grown up before our eyes to be a guy that's not only being used more, he's using as a high-leverage guy, and he's getting the job done. So that's given you the flexibility to be able to do whatever you've been doing with Stanek, to rest one of the guys, whether it be Neris or Montero if you have to, or the situation arises where you need to. Presley seems like he's fresh. He's doing everything that you expect a closer to do where we had questions early in the season. Dusty's pushed all the right buttons. Look, there. I'm not going to go back and say we weren't right in questioning the things we questioned during the regular season, but the way he's managed his team in the playoffs, he has managed it like to a script that he has followed that has been perfect.
Maybe this is Branham maturing a little bit. I do feel in hindsight that I was putting too much emphasis in a July 22nd game. Like, I do think that Dusty Baker does things over 162 that doesn't give the Astros the best chance to win in that singular game, but he's looking at the 162, trying to get guys right. It might be the better decision over 162, but it looks awkward and weird in that one game. I think Yuli Gurriel is a great example of this. I think Jeremy Pena was struggling. No analytical manager is going to move Jeremy Pena, who's struggling, to the two-hole, but Dusty Baker does, and now Jeremy Pena is a hero of the postseason.
In the two-hole. And the thing is this is the NBA load management equivalent in baseball. The fact that he managed for the playoffs instead of managing for the regular season. And the fact that he set this team up for its best chance to win at the most important time by not worrying about a regular season win here or there because he knew he was going to win the division. He knew that he had a really good team, and whether they had home field throughout or not was something that no one could have predicted the way the Yankees started. But he knew that he needed his team to have the best position to win because last year against the Braves, they didn't. Bregman was all banged up with multiple injuries. He wasn't himself. This year, for everybody whining and bitching from a Yankees perspective, no LeMahieu, no Benintendi. Well, don't forget no Uncle Mike, because Uncle Mike would have made you forget about this DH issue you got, and quite possibly they would have been a better offensive team. So you want to be at your best, playing your best with your best players available during the playoffs. The load management that Dusty used allows you to do what they're doing right now.
The fourth thing, too, is pretty similar. Dusty doesn't learn. Dusty's going to Dusty with the lineup. Because back in July, my criticism was that, look, it doesn't really matter for today, but what is concerning are the trends. The trends that Mauricio Dubon starting in center field and Chaz McCormick is not a center fielder, Dusty Baker all but said. Said he's a corner outfielder. James Click the next day said, no, he's a center fielder. And then Chaz McCormick starts more games in center field. So, like, the trends that we saw over the summer, that was just one of many of them. I was worried would carry over into the postseason. That fear has been alleviated, and Chaz McCormick has also been a hero. So, like, the whole Dusty doesn't learn or that Dusty's going to carry over these suboptimal trends into the playoffs, that didn't exist this year.
The one thing that you and I said, though, was we just hope he doesn't do it in the playoffs. He hasn't done the Dusty's going to Dusty things in the playoffs, but he stayed true to Pawpaw's belly in terms of who he trusts, what he was grooming them to do, and then playing it out now that they're in the position to use them where he wanted to use them. I think that Dusty isn't doing what we didn't want him to do in the playoffs because he's not experimenting now, but you're right. I go back and say, hey, look, I mean, I get it more now in terms of what he was doing in July to prepare for October.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. The Texans played a football game yesterday.
Wait, what?
They were in Vegas to take on the Raiders. Biggest takeaway I had from that game, I'll tell you what it is on the other side. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Texans played a football game yesterday. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. Ruben Amaro Jr., who's an MLB network analyst, former general manager for the Philadelphia Phillies, he's going to be joining us here pretty soon. I guess we can talk for a second or two about the Texans. What did you think of that game yesterday?
Well, I mean, I think if you could play three quarters of football, you know, you might be in a good position. I think that, again, you're embracing the suck the exact right way for the most part, in the fact that you're staying competitive for three-plus quarters. And similar to what we've talked about early in the season, your defense looked like it just got gassed in the fourth quarter, and then it got gashed. And the glaring weakness is they cannot stop the run. And time again, anybody with any semblance of a running game has a field day against the Houston Texans front seven. And they did it again yesterday.
The running game just wasn't very good for the Houston Texans. The running defense wasn't right. Very good. Josh Jacobs had a field day. Like, Josh Jacobs, I think, made himself quite a bit of money.
Oh, no question.
Yesterday in that game. So the rushing defense is the most glaring hole for this Houston Texans team as to why they've had struggles.
Mm-hmm.
Davis Mills, I thought, played one of his better games yesterday. Even with Davis Mills playing one of his better games yesterday, he leaves that bad taste in your mouth with a pick six there in the fourth quarter. I'm not going to use that pick six as the reason to say, oh, look, Davis Mills stinks again. I'm going to be a little bit more positive about Davis Mills. Like, to me, he brought back a glimmer of hope in that game. Like,
I saw a lot of positive.
There was in the last touchdown throw that he made against that zone defense where he placed it like perfectly towards the pylon. Best throw I've seen Davis Mills make all year, maybe in his entire NFL career.
I saw him not stare down receivers. I saw him go through progressions and be a little bit more patient in the pocket with his internal clock. I saw a lot of progress that I hadn't seen through the first 6 weeks of the season or whatever it was. So that's what I was encouraged about. Was it great? No. Was it perfect? Not even close. But at least we saw progress. And like you said, we saw glimpses. But that's the scary thing now. If you continue to see glimpses at the end of the year, you're going to have people that say, we've seen enough that he should continue to be your starting quarterback or your quarterback of your franchise. And I don't think I'm willing to ever go that far, as we know. But I'm scared in terms of how many of the people are going to jump on that side of the equation.
The biggest, and that leads to, kind of the biggest takeaway that I had of this game, because everything I was reading post-game, during the game, is that the Texans are more than a quarterback away, and a college quarterback doesn't fix that. I want to talk about that a little bit more in the 2 o'clock hour, but, Davis Mills isn't the biggest reason that you stink. But if you love a quarterback, you still got to take that quarterback.
But it's also the most important position on the field, right, too. So if he's not the guy, then what are you doing rolling with a guy?
And one guy isn't going to change the rush defense,
right,
either. Like,
right.
Even if it's the best middle linebacker in the world, if it's Ray Lewis, you're not going to all of a sudden have really good rush defense. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HR&P guest line. Ruben Amaro Jr., MLB network analyst, front office member of the Philadelphia Phillies, former general manager from 08 to 2015. 08's when they won the World Series, I believe. You can watch Ruben coming up on MLB Now at 3 p.m. Central, plus MLB Network will have live on-site coverage before and after every World Series game, beginning of course, Friday night, game one, Astros and Phillies. Ruben, thanks for taking a couple minutes this afternoon to hang out with the Killer Bees. Tell us your viewpoint of this Houston Astros team that has swept their first two series of the 2022 postseason.
Well, they're one of the most complete teams in all baseball, as far as I'm concerned. Great pitching depth. They've created a culture of winning there that's pretty spectacular, and they have one of the best managers in all the game. So, it's a pretty good combination. I've been watching them from afar for a while, and then saw the last series of the season against the Phillies. I did broadcast that game for our folks there with the Phillies, but they're a great ball club, and it'll be a fun series.
What about from the perspective, as you mentioned, you know the Phillies very well, a team that was the last to get in, they're the last standing in the National League. And we always talk about a hot team in a short series being dangerous, but a hot team in general in the postseason is dangerous. And I don't think there's any doubt you got the two hottest teams in baseball. And that offense, the way it is clicking, and how quietly Kyle Schwarber was the second best home run hitter in the game this year behind Aaron Judge. But the fact that you've got the guys behind him now hitting, it is a dangerous lineup.
There's no question about it. I mean, that was one of the reasons why Kyle Schwarber and Castellanos were signed prior to the season this year. And, you know, they can create some serious length in that lineup. And they've gotten some contributions from the 6, 7, 8, 9 guys as well. So it's a pretty lengthy lineup. It's dangerous. You know, pitching, I always believe that good pitching can beat good hitting pretty much every time. I was part of that team in 1995 when the Atlanta Braves beat up on the Cleveland Indians there in the World Series, and that was the best offensive team in the Indians that I've ever seen. But, again, you just never know. When the team is hot, as you said, they get the ball to roll the proper way, and they get the big hits when they need to, the big two-out hits, and they get enough pitching, you never know what can happen.
Ruben Amaro Jr., MLB Network analyst, former Phillies GM from 2008 through 2015, is our guest on the HRNP guest line. You mentioned the pitching, and looking at the top of the starting rotation from both sides, Justin Verlander, Framber Valdez, we would assume start game 1 and 2 for the Houston Astros. Wheeler and Nola for Philadelphia, I imagine in some combination, will start game 1 and 2 for the Philadelphia Phillies. How even is that matchup, top two in both teams' starting rotations?
Well, I don't think there's any question that they're very even at the top two. I think where the separation comes for me is when you go beyond that, the third and fourth starters for each one of them. Now, as far as the Houston Astros are concerned, you would think it's going to be McCullers, but it could be any number of guys. I mean, Christian Javier and Luis Garcia and all types of guys that can be thrown in there, because they have so much depth. And then beyond Nola and Wheeler, you're talking about, you talk about Ranger Suarez, you're talking about the possibility of having a guy like Noah Syndergaard. Gibson could be a guy that you could throw in there as well. A lot of it depends on how the matchups work. But, Rob Thompson's done a really good job of mixing and matching. I think the depth is the separator. I do believe that when it comes down to brass tacks, that Houston does have a lot more depth in their rotation. But, again, it's all about execution, and it's something that Houston's done pretty well, and the Phillies have done well as well. And, in these series, you just don't know who's going to be hotter and who's going to be making the pitches and getting the big base hits to win games.
Ruben, can you take us through what happened when Joe Girardi was shown the door and Rob Thompson was given the reins, in the fact that it made such a huge difference, obviously, in this team and literally saved their season? It seemed to me when the move was made that it was a little bit eyebrow-raising from afar, because Girardi had all the success with the Yankees and a veteran guy that had a lot of veterans on his squad. But then as you kind of watched it all kind of fall into place, it seemed like he was a major stumbling block for the guys in that locker room, and they like Rob and they want to play for him, and they did that the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think Dave Dombrowski had a tough decision to make, and Dave's not afraid to make them. I think it was a combination of things. When you sign guys from outside an organization, guys like Castellanos and Schwarber, and you bring other people from outside, it does take some time to kind of have to adjust. Offensively, they had not really come around, and it was right around the time that Schwarber started swinging the bat and went nuts for the month of June and July and really kind of spark-plugged them. That was around the same time that that Dave Dombrowski made the change with Rob Thompson. And I think you're right. I think that Dave felt like this team was underachieving at the time, and I felt like a different voice would work. It's worked out splendidly. I think Rob, first of all, he probably should have been a manager in the major leagues prior to this, but he finally got the opportunity, and he kind of ran with it. I mean, he's been around winning managers, and he's been had the tutelage of being around people who know the game, the Joe Torres of the world and the Joe Girardis as well as mentors and such. So he's been around winning baseball, and he's got his own personality. And I think the players really rallied around him, the steadiness of who he is and how he is and how they've connected with him. And I think he's given some people some opportunities openly, the young players, and he set some people in roles and put people in situations to have success. And I think it's kind of snowballed in a positive way for them all the way down the stretch here.
Ruben Amaro Jr., our guest on the HRMP guest line. The Philly offense seems to be hot, too. A little bit better in the playoffs than what we saw in the regular season. And finished stronger in the regular season than what we saw early. Of course, Bryce Harper's injury thrown into the mix there. Having him healthy is obviously a significant bat that you add in there. Top of the order, solid. Middle of the order, really good. And now a little bit more length at the bottom of the order as well. What have you seen from the Phillies offense?
Yeah, I mean, whenever you want to have you're getting these situations when you're in the playoffs, you want to have your big boys step up. But often it's the guys that you don't necessarily count on who can pick it up. And I've seen some really excellent at bats from guys like Gene Segura, who's always have been a good bat to ball skill guy. But also the kids like Alec Bohm and Bryson Stott, who have had very key at bats in important times during the course of the playoffs. And even a guy like Brandon Marsh has come through in the 9-hole. So you've had some contributions in that 6, 7, 8, 9 spot that's given it, given the Phillies a little bit of length, and to set some things up for the top of the lineup as well. So, I think that when you have a club that's having success, you gotta have contributions from everybody. There's no question that you want your big boys like the Harpers of the world who's been just phenomenal, and literally out of this world. I mean, you want to have those guys perform, and that's really important. But you also want to have some of those other guys fill in when and come up with big base hits to kind of move the line forward, and that's exactly what's happened with Philadelphia.
Ruben, put your general manager's hat back on for a second, because I'm really curious. This Houston situation, you had Carlos Correa heading for free agency. There was a ton of people in this city, and rightfully so, wanted to keep their folk hero of the playoffs, even though it was at an expense. James Click made a very unpopular decision, and he saw something in a kid that not many people saw or knew about, and he went with his gut, and it's worked out for him. I'm just curious how difficult that can be for a general manager to kind of make that unpopular decision, know you're going to be judged in the court of popular opinion, but know from the standpoint that if it works out, it can really be a huge benefit for a team.
Well, anytime you make a decision like that, it's difficult. I went through it myself when we were trying to make the transition, moving a guy like Jimmy Rollins or Chase Utley. That's a very difficult thing to do, and to move past those guys who have been were iconic players and major contributors and important players in your club. But if you have someone that you feel can step in and do that job, then I think you have to go and do what's necessary, and that's obviously what James Click did. Pena is a young player is pretty special. I mean, he's a kid who's got great makeup. You're filling a huge set of shoes there in Carlos Correa, and for me, I think that they had a support system around him that was really solid. When you have the Bregmans and the Altuves of the world that are right next door to you and hitting around you in the lineup, I think that's very helpful. But when you have a guy who's that kind of makeup, I think positive things can happen.
Ruben, thanks so much for taking a few minutes with the Killer Bees. Appreciate your insight, and enjoy the World Series. It begins on Friday. We'll be watching your work.
I appreciate it. It'll be fun.
It's Ruben Amaro Jr. You can watch Ruben coming up on MLB Now when we get off, 3 o'clock. Plus, MLB Network will have live on-site coverage before and after every World Series game, which, of course, begins at Minute Maid Park on Friday night, Game 1, Phillies and Astros. Mailbag Monday. We do it every Monday at 2 o'clock. You can ask the Killer Bees whatever you want to ask us. You can ask us what we think about Brendan taking off every other day, what we think about BMAC filling in, what we think these tears are coming from. Maybe New York, that's raining in our city. 713-780-ESPN, our Monday mailbag. 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.